begin week two, chapters 4 through 8, as additional notes of concern or interest that goes with the New Testament survey. Chapter 4, page 78, second paragraph, the author uses the term the first gospel, not necessarily the first gospel written. If Matthew is dependent on Mark, then it argues for a proto-Mark theory. And so if you read that, understand that just because Matthew appears first in our New Testament does not make it the first gospel written necessarily. Also, page 80, concerning the Magi, I would direct you to a great article about them and the explanation of the star that appeared in Alfred Edersheim's The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah. Chapter 4, page 83, note in Matthew 7:28, Jesus taught as one having authority, not as their scribes. Understand that the style of the time was to quote a litany of precedents set by the preceding rabbis to give authority to your position. And Jesus didn't appeal to the rabbinic schools like Hillel or Shammai. He just spoke as he had the authority himself. That's that statement. Chapter 5, the Gospel of Mark, page 88. Be sure you know what Q is, quella, meaning source. It's a German word. They've applied it to as a document that is not yet found, and it's a basis for common material between Matthew and Luke. Apparently, it's a collection of sayings that Jesus had, and some unknown author recorded those for use by others. So Q is the source in German, and again, we've not found it, but there seems to be evidence for its existence. Page 89, form criticism and redaction criticism are rather recent developments, and the problem with that kind of criticism has always been modern man can look back and say would have, could have, or should have, but that's not nearly as accurate as the word of the first century eyewitness. And they make well-stated cases. I feel that some of them are way off base. Theologians that don't have a personal relationship with Jesus may put theories forth, and Elwell calls these dogmatic, not historical or factual grounds. Page 89, I personally favor early dating. I take the dates at the earliest possible ones that are available, just so you know. The following phrases are used in theological circles when discussing the date of writing. Termus aequo is a time from which, it's the earliest possible date. The termus ad quem, time to which, is the latest possible date. Historical background will give you when a book was written. If it's talking about the fall of Jerusalem and obviously 70 AD, you know that it set before or after that, depending on the way the writing goes. Remind you that Ego Me on page 91, Mark's 14:62, is Christ's response of Ego Me, I am that I am. It's the same thing God said in the Septuagint in response to Moses. And so it's in John's account, several times Jesus uses the word I am, and that's very important. Page 94, I think that I might take exception with Elwell's remark that the task became too much for Jesus, and so he gave apostolic authority over demons and disease. Now, while it certainly created more opportunities to have more disciples involved, I believe Jesus was training and teaching and preparing them for ministry after his departure. And the way it's stated in the book, it at least appears that Jesus was incapable of being all that God desired or needed for him to be or to do. And then on page 124, Elwell states kind of an opposite view, Mark 6:7, and from page 83, Matthew 10:1. So be aware of that. Page 95 to 96, I also believe there's another reason when Jesus demands silence after a healing or exorcism. In Mark's account, in Mark 5:41, the healing of Jairus' daughter, many people would have taken the words of Jesus where he said, Talitha mekum, as a magical phrase for raising the dead. And Jesus did not mean when he says, and not to tell anyone, that the little girl couldn't appear in public or that the parents act as though there had been no miracle. The community was already well aware of the fact of the illness, and many would have known about the death announcement. especially when the servant said to Jairus not to bother Jesus since the girl was dead. And can compare that with Acts 19:13 through 16. So I think another reason, in addition to what Elwell says, is that Jesus was trying to avoid people thinking it was just in the words and a magical incantation, and that was pretty common in that era. The sixth chapter, page 98, Theophilus, lover of God, it's also included in Acts, Luke's other book, chapter 1:1. There's still some doubt about Theophilus's identity, and Elwell's statement that he's the Roman official is probably a little more certain than we can determine at this point. Again, I remind you to be sure and be aware of Marcion and his heresy and the importance to the New Testament study, page 98. Seventh chapter, the Gospel of John, and page 100 talks about internal criticism. Rudolf Bultmann is a proponent of these types of thoughts, of looking back and saying, well, an author could have done it or would have done it or should have done it if he meant this or that. And that is always very questionable ground to look back and try to determine a point of reference that way. 110, page 110 in Refutation, AD 180 is a time for writing of John. As we mentioned in week one, John Ryland's papyrus, the oldest existing papyrus of the New Testament, was found in Egypt and dated about AD 125. This papyrus is in the John Ryland's Museum in Manchester, England. The thing about that is, if it was found in Egypt in the Oxyrhynchus discovery in the Hagnamadi area, it means that it was already written and translated and been moved early on at the time of writing. And so to say that John was writing 180 AD is pretty well dispelled by this. The idea of the Trinity, page 111, I believe found in Genesis 1:27, 1:28, where it says, let us. It's also obvious in the baptism of Jesus. Jesus in the water, the dove, and the Spirit in the air, the voice of God in heaven. So, page 112, Gnosticism. The Greek word gnosis means knowledge. Be sure and do a little extra reading in this area. Paul had to battle their beliefs often. Page 114, Dwight L. Moody tells of an evangelist that preached a week-long revival, and the text for all week was John 3:16. He said on the last night he had not exhausted all the passage had to say, and so Moody said it was one of the great revivals he'd ever attended. And in the eighth chapter, the man from Galilee, in page 120, the shepherds were most likely watching a temple flock, so they stayed out year-round. Again, Alfred Edersheim, The Life and Times, Jesus the Messiah, gives great insight to why there would have been shepherds out this time of year and what they were doing, and a great read. Page 121, be aware that there are two Bethanies. Check your maps to see the difference when it talks about Bethany as a village. Page 121, just a question. Did Jesus alone hear the voice from heaven as implied by Elwell's reference of Mark 1:10? And compare that with Matthew 3:16 and 17. Page 126, Moses and Elijah, as they appear at the Transfiguration, were representing the law and prophets, which summarized and fulfilled in Christ when Jesus said it was the greatest commandment. And also on page 127, be aware that the Feast of Booths is the same as the Feast of Tabernacles. This concludes week two.